My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Do these words describe you? You've come to a point in your life where you begin to question what's come before and what's yet to come. Whether you are in your 30s, your 40s, 50s, or older, there are times that these deep and profound questions and thoughts are in the forefront of our consciousness. What steps can we take to lead the lives that we consciously choose and find personal, professional, emotional, and spiritual fulfillment? My very special guest this week on Destination Unlimited, New York Times bestselling author of Life Makeovers and Take Time for Your Life, and beloved spiritual teacher Cheryl Richardson, found herself asking these same questions. She delivers her most intimate and profound work to date on the obstacles and opportunities of reaching midlife in her new book, Waking Up in Winter, in Search of What Really Matters in Midlife. It is the breathtakingly candid account of the most impactful year of Cheryl's life, with passages that capture the intricacies of marriage, friendship, success, money, and self-care. Cheryl offers her experiences as an illustration of how to grow, reflect, laugh, and change. A lifelong journal writer, Cheryl had been for years documenting her innermost thoughts, desires, and hopes. She recognized that these passages and reflections were exactly what her readers need from representing her teaching in action and life being lived. Cheryl is the New York Times best-selling author of several books. She was the first president of the International Coach Federation and holds one of their first master certified coach credentials. Her work has been covered widely in the media, including Good Morning America, The Today Show, CBS This Morning, New York Times, USA Today, Good Housekeeping, and O Magazine. She was the team leader for the Lifestyle Makeover series on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she accompanied Ms. Winfrey on the Live Your Best Life nationwide tour. Cheryl also served as the co-executive producer and host of the Life Makeover Project with Cheryl Richardson on the Oxygen Network, and as the co-executive producer and host of two public television specials, Stand Up for Your Life and Create an Abundant Life. Please join me in extending a very warm Destination Unlimited welcome to Cheryl Richardson. Good evening, Cheryl.
Hi, Victor. Thank you so much. It's great to be here with you.
And thank you for joining us. You know, when we welcome a guest to Destination Unlimited for the first time, we like to find out how they arrived on their life path. Now, were you born to become who you've become, or was there something different in your life? Please share your story with our listeners.
That's a good question. I will say that very early on in my life, I had a real hunger for self-knowledge and learning. I really value learning and growth, personal growth. So in some ways, I do feel like the life that has unfolded before me really is a reflection of something I was connected to very early on. And, you know, that might have something to do with journaling, because I did start keeping a journal when I was 12. And without realizing it at the time, you know, that would become this tool for self-reflection and self-understanding. And so, I have always been, I've been a gal who's been interested in checking under the hood. And over time, keeping a journal would, you know, it sort of went from just tracking what I did during my day, almost like a diary, to really exploring my feelings and my thoughts about things, and recognizing that in journaling and just free writing, I could tap into wisdom and insight that was really important to me, and learn things about myself that I didn't know until I put pen to the page. So, my whole life has just been one long inquiry into what makes me tick, what makes human beings tick. I mean, in a lot of ways, my work as a coach really was kind of the next level of taking what I was doing in my own life and bringing it out to the world and working with individuals and then eventually groups and then eventually speaking to larger audiences. And then technology comes, right? And suddenly we're able to communicate with people all over the world. And I've really just been sharing my own journey, my own inquiry process with readers in the hopes that it helps them in some ways. And, you know, thank God so far, so good. So
Isn't that really the key to being a teacher or mentor of any kind, is that you take what you've garnered in life, the good and the bad, and then share that with others so that they can learn from your experience?
Yeah, I do believe, you know, the old saying, we teach what we have to learn, I think is true. Mm-hmm. I think that we also need to be committed to mastery. Not that you ever arrive or get fully cooked. I don't think so. I mean, life is just ever evolving in that way. But I think that as a teacher, I have an obligation to really be deeply committed to and connected to my own personal growth and my own personal development. And then in doing so, I need to be able to teach from a wealth of experience that reflects arriving someplace, right? Like making some kind of headway and accomplishing some kind of understanding, so that I'm teaching from, I've done both, really teaching along the way as I've gone through certain experiences, but then also in my books, ultimately the books reflect what I've learned and how it's worked in my life and how my life has changed as a result of what I practice. So yeah, I think it's really important to walk your talk. The best teachers do that because they have the best influence on their audience.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about journaling, because it's been so important in your life, and I know it could be very important in the lives of your readers and our listeners. Was journaling a natural process for you? Is that something that just started flowing from you, or is that something that you had to teach yourself?
Well, the act of writing, it's so interesting, Victor, because I really did start when I was 12, and I remember I often like joke when I'm teaching writers, I laugh and say one of my first entries, because I still have it, was a poem. I wrote a lot of poetry in the beginning. I think that was a way that I was trying to capture the essence of my life without realizing it, and also just trying to just, you know, capture the events of my life. But my first poem was very profound, Victor. It was, "Life is like a Schlitz can. You must grab all the gusto you can." I know,
it's wonderful.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
No, because it's wonderful.
I mean, it must have been, you know, it's funny because it's, in a lot of ways, looking now, I see it's such a reflection of me. Like, I have this weird sense of humor and also this commitment to fully being alive. And that must have been, I don't even remember, but because I don't know how old you are, Victor, but like, I don't remember Schlitz. I think it was a beer, and that must have been their tagline or something. You've got to grab all the gusto you can.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
But yeah, so I started with poetry, and then I started to kind of add to the poetry the happenings of the day or the things that were going on, and then it evolved from there to, well, let me back up and say I had a real love of music, and I think that fed my desire for my need to write poetry and lyrics and song lyrics and things like that. And then eventually it would go from that to writing about the day and then writing about my feelings and the thoughts I had about things. And so the good news is, because I started young, I had this really visceral experience of being comforted by and informed by and inspired by the process of writing. I would be upset about something, I'd write about it, and by the end of two pages, I would have an insight that would help me to feel better and help me to understand what was going on. And then over the years, journaling became a whole bunch of different things. Sometimes it was just writing about my day. Sometimes it was writing song lyrics and then writing poetry. Sometimes it was, you know, copying down favorite quotes that I had seen because I wanted to be able to go back and read them, or writing affirmations, although I didn't call it that. I remember one year I spent a whole year just writing letters to God in my journal because I was trying to establish a new relationship with God that was different than the religion of my youth. One time I spent a whole year, at the end of the day, I would make a list of 10 things that brought me pleasure that day as a way to reconnect with the importance of pleasure in my life. And sometimes, I mean, if you looked at my journals now, you'd see pictures, you'd see some drawings, and I really suck at drawing, but like trying to capture maybe a dream image, you'd see lots of dreams in my journals. Some of them are in my book as well, because it's always been a part of my process. And what I did teach myself that I had no idea that I was going to be able to do this was when I wrote my first book, my editor said to me when she read the proposal, she said, your journal writing has taught you how to write in a simple and accessible way, and you're really fortunate for that. And I remember just smiling and thinking, wow, I had no idea that all these years of keeping a journal would actually teach me the craft of writing. Mm. So that was pretty great.
You consider writing to be an art form, don't you?
I do, and I consider myself an artist, and writing is really important to me, the craft of writing.
Absolutely. So your words on page are to you what the canvas is to a great artist.
They are, and yet I'm not a literary writer, but I do want to capture the truth of what it means to be a human being on planet Earth, and I want people to feel like we're sitting in our living room together, and you're listening to me talk, you know, we're having an intimate conversation, and that it's easy and accessible, but also that you don't feel alone. You feel like, God, she gets it. I've been through what she's going through. And to me, that's the highest form of feedback, is for somebody to say, wow, I feel like you really get what's going on for me, and I'm comforted by that.
It's the ultimate human connection, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
My guest is Cheryl Richardson. She's the author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. And we'll be back with more Cheryl and this fascinating conversation after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting.
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
twinsies.
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Okay, men, time to be an all-star caregiver. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Be there emotionally and physically. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Cheryl Richardson, author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. Cheryl, you write in Waking Up in Winter that Mae Sarton both influenced and inspired you. Share a little more about who this poet and author was for our listeners who may not be familiar with Mae and how she touched your life.
Yeah, well, when I was, I think it was in the 80s, so I was in my late 20s, and I happened to stumble upon a book she had written called Journal of a Solitude. And it was about a year in the life of a creative woman. And I was already writing at the time, but I was just starting to think about actually publishing my work, you know, becoming a, quote, professional writer. And so I stumbled upon this journal and I thought, oh, this is really great to be able to read about a writer's, like a real writer who's been published, life would be awesome. And I was so captivated by the form of, it was in journal form, and of course I had been keeping a journal, so I was captivated by that process. But I felt like I was reading the intimate details of this woman's life, and we shared a lot of things that, a lot of interests, animals, nature, the ocean, writing, women's issues, and I loved her book, and I would go on. So she was a poet, but she wrote fiction, nonfiction, a whole series of journals throughout her life, all the way through 83 when she died. Her last journal was called At 83. And she really captured her life experiences on the page. One journal was called House by the Sea, and it was when she leased this house right on the water in Maine. And she talked about moving to this place and what her life was like involved with the ocean. And one journal was called Recovery, and it was when she had had, I think, a stroke or a heart attack and was recovering through that. And so I was fascinated by her journals in particular, and I couldn't wait to get the next one and to read it. And it's some of the, I don't know what, you know, it's just my thing, I guess. There are a handful of books that I've reread in my life, and I've reread many of her journals. I felt like she was a friend, and I felt like I was living life alongside of her, and I was learning a lot about what it meant to be a professional writer before I would ever publish a book, and also what it was like to be, she was a single woman, she was a lesbian, and was, I think was, you know, came out very, very early in her life, and she was brave, you know, she wrote about topics that a lot of people didn't write about and had opinions that, and wasn't afraid to share them. And she also had very powerful literary friends like Virginia Woolf. And so it was a fascinating world to me. And so when it came time to publish another book, I knew in my heart that self-help, I had already written six of them. And I thought, you know what, I've really written everything I need to write about managing our outer lives, our self-care, our emotional lives, our spiritual lives, and I wasn't really sure what was next. And it was my husband, Michael, who said to me, just sort of offhanded over dinner one night with friends, why don't you just publish a journal? You love Mae Sarton. You always write in your journals. Like, why don't you just do that? And I thought, yeah, why don't I do that? Like, it hadn't occurred to me. And so then, of course, I had a whole bunch of fear, like we often do as writers or as, you know, creative people, as artists, who, you know, who's going to want to read my journal? And is this really going to speak to anybody? Is it, you know, it's such a risk. I mean, it's risky enough to write a book. It's another thing to write a book about your personal life, because you really open yourself up to, it's a very vulnerable act. You open yourself up to criticism at a whole different level. But I knew in my heart it was the right thing. And so I pulled out a journal that captured a period in my life that was significant. And it was a journal that I had kept after turning 50. I think I was 53 or 54 during this particular time. Debbie Ford, my dear friend Debbie Ford, Victor, I know you knew Debbie.
Yes.
Yeah. Debbie had died. I had the very unusual experience of being at the deathbed of somebody who lived a parallel life. And Debbie said some really important things to me that you just don't forget in a situation like that. And so facing my mortality, entering my 50s, losing a dear friend, all of those things really began this kind of hero's journey, a descent period where I started to question everything. And it's a process that we all go through, where I really began to question everything in my life and, you know, started asking myself on a consistent basis, if this were my last day, would I be happy with how I'm living my life? If this were my last week, would I be happy? And the answer was no. With some of the things that were going on, the answer was no. And so I had to really look at what we all do, right? Which is face a period in my life where I realized there are some things that have to change, and I'm scared out of my mind at the thought of changing them. But when you wake up and you commit to living a fully awake and present life, you can't pretend and you can't deny the truth. So I started facing the truth. Like I've told clients for years, it all starts with the truth. Yep. And then things began to change from there. Yeah.
You begin your journey in waking up in winter with autumn. What does autumn mean to you, both as a season and as a time of life?
Well, so we're just coming out of, we're in the middle of autumn right now where I am. And the first thing autumn means to me is often sadness. I mean, I'll just be honest that I'm a gardener and I love the sun. I love the light. I'm passionate about light. And so autumn means it gets darker, right? We turn the clocks back. The garden starts to wither. And so in the beginning of this book, when I'm writing about autumn, I'm writing about that, this sort of sadness that seeps in and feels like, oh gosh, winter's just, you know, winter is imminent. And, this is a time when things start to wither and die. And, by the end of the book, I realized, by the end of the journal, I realized that autumn really is a time, the autumn time of life is a time when we harvest the experiences that we've had. We go back and we look at what's worked in my life, what hasn't, what have been the meaningful people, experiences, choices that I've made, and what can I sort of cull from those experiences that I can bring forward with me into this next full stage of my life. It's so interesting, Victor, because now that we're living so much longer than we used to, it's a very, to me, in a lot of ways, autumn is the third stage of life, right? The third period before winter where we then prepare for our death. But it's interesting to think that, you know, in 10 or 20 years, we might need another season because there might be 5 stages to life or 6 stages to life.
New spring, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly right. So autumn is a rich, and it's, you know, there is richness and sadness. There is beauty and sadness. And then there's also richness and beauty in taking the time to stop and look back and really capture the wisdom and the insight of our life experiences so that we move forward in our lives in a very conscious and deliberate way.
Yes, absolutely. Autumn, for me personally, has always been very bittersweet. 20 years ago, actually, this autumn, my former partner, Judy, had gone into the final stages of cancer and passed away January of 1998. And she and I used to take these trips up the east coast of the United States in the fall and autumn, and specifically to see the foliage change and to feel that crisp autumn air and just be in that environment and atmosphere. And there's an old song by Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues called Forever Autumn. Mm-hmm. And he has a line in there, through autumn's golden gown, we used to kick our way. You always loved that time of year. Those dying leaves lie undisturbed now because you're not here. And it was always melancholy, but that relationship, I grew so much through that wonderful relationship. And we had only 3 years together. And in those 3 years we had together, we lived a lifetime. And so many wonderful things came as a result of our time together. That I'm just grateful for her and her presence in my life. And autumn is now not as mournful or sad as it was for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope that, you know, how have you transformed autumn for yourself?
Absolutely.
What does it reflect for you now? I'm curious.
Well, in actuality, autumn was also the time that she and I both graduated from the New Seminary of New York 20 years ago last month. And at that time of graduation, I dedicated my speech. I was president of the class, the graduating class, and I dedicated my speech to her and talked about her courage and talked about her selflessness and talked about the thousands of students. She was a special education teacher. How many thousands of students were touched by her life and how important that was. And in the process of doing that, someone who was coming into the school at the time heard me speak and said to herself, where do you find a gentleman who honors a woman that way? Mm-hmm. And within 2 years, she and I were together and we got married. And that's my wife, Lori Sue. So the gift that Judy gave me in opening my heart fully to myself also helped me open my heart to others. And in the process, Lori Sue and I got together, and we've been together now for 18 years.
Wow. So Judy really was like an angel in your life.
Yes, she was. Absolutely. And, yeah, what a gift.
Came in with a very specific purpose. And I mean, you know, there's such clues in what you say when you talk about the lessons that you learned from your relationship with her. It's interesting, isn't it, how some people come into our lives for a short period of time, but it does feel like a lifetime. It's a powerful impact that they have. And
absolutely. And that's why I shared that the season could be at any time in our life. It doesn't necessarily have to be in our 50s or 60s. It can be in our 30s or 40s. And any time that there's a major transition in our life is a time to stop and reflect on that transition and see what's coming up for us.
Absolutely. Like late 20s, the Saturn return for people is often a time where people begin a descent because they've got all these expectations of themselves. And I find the spiritual pioneers are often not living by convention at that time. And so they feel like there's something wrong with them. And that can really inspire this deep reevaluation period too. So you're right. The autumn, there's stages that we go through throughout all of our lives. And then there's the bigger stages of spring, summer, autumn, and fall, and winter. So, it's all a very wonderful adventure when you see it through the lens of our own personal and spiritual growth.
Absolutely. My wonderful guest is Cheryl Richardson. She's the author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. Cheryl, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your wonderful work.
Well, if they go to CherylRichardson.com, that's my website. And then I'm also on Facebook under Cheryl Richardson. And then on Twitter and Coach on Call, my username is Twitter and Instagram, my username is Coach on Call. So, and I'm the only person who writes in those areas. So I often visit with people on Facebook and you can find on my website where to order the book, all the different places that you can order the book.
And we'll be back with more of Cheryl Richardson and Waking Up in Winter after these words from the OM Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
You've been searching for a perspective beyond the mainstream? Check it out. Join your hosts, Yelito Pascual and Diana Gold Holland, on Share International Radio for thought-provoking views behind the news, Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio. You can also find us at shareontheairradio.org. This may be the message of hope you've been waiting for.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Cheryl Richardson, author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. Cheryl, do you write each journal entry as part of this book? Did you write each journal entry as part of this book specifically, or did you include entries from other times or parts of your life?
No, this is a real journal. So it captures a very specific period in my life and the journal entries that I made during that period from about September through the following first day of spring. So I took an actual journal. It was a lot longer than what the book ultimately would be, but I took the journal and then I just went back and edited it for grammar and punctuation. And also there were places where I had to give context for people who were unfamiliar with me, or if I were writing about a particular topic that needed more context to make sense to the reader, I would add that. But it was very much limited to that period of time.
You know, the prose that you use in Waking Up in Winter, you made every word and every description count as if you were carrying the reader into your life with you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that a lot. There were certainly, you know, when I first started writing the book, I didn't want to edit it at all. I wanted it to just stay exactly as it was because it was so important to me that it be the real thing, you know, that it wasn't just an edited version of a journal, me sharing. I mean, there's a lot of personal stuff in there, as you know, that I sort of went back and forth with, do I really want to share this? Do I really want to tell this story? But I wanted it to be the truth about what it means to live a life dedicated to consciousness and personal development. And so there were times where I would go back and just help the reader to feel like they were really with me in the experience. I would add some descriptive language to do just that. I wanted you to feel like you were taking this journey with me. And what I also wanted was that you were taking this journey with me and you were privy to the tools and the resources and the thinking and the practices and the exercises that I was using in my own life to deal with difficult things and to deal with change and transition so that you could maybe decide to use some of those tools yourself.
You know, it was almost as if you were writing for your best friend.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. I appreciate that. That's a lovely idea. I mean,
And doing so, embracing basically all of your readers as your friend, as your best friend.
Yeah. I we're all fellow travelers on this journey called life. And it's not easy being in human form here on the planet. And so the only thing that has, the only thing that has allowed me to survive here is my commitment to growth and my commitment to consciousness. And I want people to know that they're not alone. And just because I'm a teacher, just because I've written books, I struggle with the same things my audience does. And it's important to me that people know that.
Here you go. So you're a successful self-help author and coach, world famous, New York Times bestselling author, helping others to achieve their dreams. What was it like when you reached that point in your life when you were not motivated to write and you began questioning everything?
Well, it was really, I mean, one of the hardest things to question was my work. I remember there was a point when I had just started going back and editing the journal. Right? I mean, I spent 2 years debating on whether or not to publish this. And I remember a couple of things. Being in the thick of the descent period of the hero's journey, so I think of the hero's journey as a three-stage process generally. There's the descent where what has worked for us before no longer works, and we know we can't live the life we're living, but we have no idea where we're headed to. And we start to reevaluate everything, and it doesn't feel great. It's hard. And then we go from the descent into the mystery. And this is where we all need to really learn how to be in this place of mystery. Most of us want to just get out of Dodge as quick as possible and like choose something and move forward. But being in the mystery means you kind of are going through a dark night of the soul, a dark period where you don't know who you are, you don't know who you're going to be when you emerge, you don't know where you're headed because you're so focused on letting go of what no longer serves you. And then eventually you come to the ascent where you realize, oh, this is what I want to keep, this is what I need to let go of, or you've already let go of some things. This is who I am, the new me that's emerging, the new me who has grown and evolved is emerging, and this is the direction that I'm going to head in. And It was a tough period, and there were many times, and I tell the truth in the book, where I think, Jesus, you know, I'm a self-help author, for crying out loud. I mean, I've been teaching this stuff, and right now I'm really sucking at it. I'm not good with my self-care, or I'm scared about change, or I'm lost. I'm in the mystery part of the hero's journey, and I'm lost, and I don't know what to do. And I remember reaching out to my own coach, a woman who's coached me over the years, who I really respect and love and admire. And I remember being on the phone with her crying, saying, you know, this sucks. I have no idea. I don't know if I should publish this book. I have no idea what's next for me. I've built this incredibly successful career, and I don't know if this is where I want to be. And I remember saying to her at one point, I'm not sure I'm ever going to write again. I don't think I'm going to publish this. Maybe I'm not a writer. And then there was dead silence. And then she went, okay, Cheryl, take a deep breath. You are a writer. And you will be writing for the rest of your life. And there was something so comforting in that, you know, like the mirroring. So, and I remember just saying to her, okay, all right, you know, like, I'll remember that. And then she said something to me that was really powerful that I included in the book. She said, I said to her, I feel like I'm all over the place and I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. And she said to me, Cheryl, your meandering has purpose. Just meander. And I don't know why, Victor, but I was just so comforted by that. I thought, I think the CEO woman in me was like, okay, we have an agenda, right? There's a purpose to this meandering, and I'm going to stay in this mysterious place. And I can promise you, and if there's one message, there's many messages I want to give to listeners, but one message that's so important is when you are in that mystery, that zone of in-between, when you're leaving a life that no longer works for you, but you don't know where you're headed, the longer we can stay in that mystery, the better the life on the other end will be, because too many of us want to short circuit that journey. We want to just get that new job or enter into that new relationship or move or do something because it feels so uncomfortable to be in the mystery. But if you can wait, especially later in life, if you can wait and really give yourself time, the life that emerges from that, I think, is so far more deeply reflective of the soul than you don't have to go back and correct a bunch of stuff either, like the wrong choice in a relationship or the wrong choice in a job. So learning to be in the mystery is a real art form in and of itself.
I had a wonderful experience about in my late 30s, where I was attending a weekly, they used to call them salons, where you'd gather in someone's home and discuss various topics or books or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And this wonderful woman, well into her 80s at the time in Brooklyn, New York, held these Friday night salons. And I was just emerging into my new spiritual path. And there were a lot of things being presented that I wasn't sure about and uncomfortable with. And she noticed that. And in a very motherly way, she called me over at the end of one of these Friday night salons. And she said, may I share something with you? And I said, absolutely. She said, Victor, God does not require that we be holy, but God would love for us to be whole, to embrace everything that we are. Those words changed my life. And I can think, when you have those opportunities, you talked about your coach, and these people who come into your lives and give you those special messages are just so precious.
Well, they're so timely. And, you know, first of all, I love the idea of a salon. It's so funny that you would mention that, Victor, because my husband and I have just been talking lately about how much we actually want to start hosting salons because, and Mae Sarton wrote a lot about getting together with literary friends for those reasons, you know, the deep conversations they would have, which the beauty of later in life is you don't really have a lot of patience for the cocktail level of life anymore, right? You want to have deeper conversations. And so the idea of salons, I think, is so important and needed. I actually think they would be, you know, we live in a country now where it's so black and white, right? People are fighting against each other. There's no civil dialogue that, and I think that that's really important. And I think deeper conversations are important. And you're right. People can come into our lives. I think this is so important for us to remember as human beings. One statement that we make to somebody else can change the course of that person's life. And I had a great example of that. I'll share a little story with you. I was having breakfast with some friends of mine just a few days ago at a little breakfast restaurant near us. And there was a couple sitting next to us. And at the end of any time I go out to eat, I always leave. I have card decks that I've published, self-care cards and grace cards. And I always pull a card out of a deck. I keep them in my bag and I leave them with the gratuity. And so this particular restaurant, the staff waits for me to leave because I leave them all cards, the whole staff. They love them. I just pull them out at random. And the couple next to me were, they were looking at me like, what are you doing? And so I fanned out a deck of cards and I said to them, here, you know, go ahead and pull a card. And this man pulled a card and it was the ACT card. And it was about acting, taking a chance and acting, trusting that faith would support your decision. And I said to him, usually when someone pulls that card, they've got a really important decision to make and their soul knows what they want to do, but the head's trying to talk them out of it. And the man had tears come to his eyes. And I went and I paid my check. And when I went to leave, he stopped me and he said, I have been trying to make a decision about buying this home on Kauai in Hawaii. He said, and I am going to buy that home now. And I'm going to hang this card at the opening of the doorway. He said, because my soul wants to be there. And I left the restaurant thinking, if I hadn't like just fanned out the card deck, if we hadn't had, like, what a gift it was to have that simple exchange. And we all have a chance to do that, to deliver a message that can change somebody else's lives and life. And I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely. I think that's a practice that we should each get into, that every one of us has the capability of doing that. I remember being up in Massachusetts for a friend's wedding and not having any shoes and finding a local shoe store. And there was a young woman, couldn't have been more than 20, working the counter, and she was by herself. And I said to her, by the way, I also need some dress socks. Can you show me where they are, or can you tell me where they are? And she could have just said, go to aisle number 2, second shelf. And she actually came around the counter and led me to where the socks were, pointed them out, and said, are any of these appropriate for you? And I was grateful for the fact that she did that. And when we came back to the counter, she was a very young woman. She seemed very unsure of herself. She said, I'm sorry if I wasn't professional. I said, young lady, you were the most professional person I've ever met in a shoe store. You took the time to take ownership of my needs, and you will be a great person. You are a great person, and you will have a great career. And just saying those few words to her, which were truth and from my heart, I'm sure made a positive difference in her life.
Absolutely.
My guest is Cheryl Richardson. She's the author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. And we'll be back with more of Cheryl after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Every Tuesday on Living with Moxie, join Shefali Burns and Donna Martouge in conversations designed to take you to the next level, where we highlight ideas, resources, and strategies that provide you with the leverage you require to meet and exceed your business and personal goals. Each week on Living with Moxie, we will lead conversations related to success, achievement, fulfillment, and extraordinary, vibrant living. Are you ready to live with Moxie? Join us.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for taking
me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Victor the Voice Furman. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for your listenership and support during the year, and to wish you and your families joy, happiness, health, prosperity, and peace in this season of light. And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Cheryl Richardson, author of the brand new book, Waking Up in Winter. Cheryl, you worked with Hay House in the past, and you wrote, "You can create an exceptional life with the late, great Louise Hay." She didn't start Hay House until she was in her 60s. Does that inspire you about the years to come?
That's a really funny question. I mean, it's a great question. And I have been using that story to inspire people for a long time, especially since Louise and I wrote the book together. And it's really interesting, Victor, because at this point in my life, you know, I've lived a very big, full life, and I'm really grateful for that already. I've done a lot with my life. And in some ways, I'm inspired by it, and I'm also intimidated by it because and intimidated, I don't know if that's, I don't know what the right word is, but let me just say this, that yes, I think that one of the things that's, one of the messages that's so important to be conveyed to people is that, you know, life doesn't end when you reach 50 or, you know, a lot of us, 50 sort of feels like midlife. And I have a good friend of mine who's a comedian, and he always talks about how you turn 50 and then, and you think, okay, that's it, I'm going to die. Like that's, your whole focus is just on death and dying. And nowadays, you really do have a chance to have a whole new life. And Louise was such an example of that, starting this, you know, what would become the largest self-help publishing company in the world, starting it at 60 years old. And so I think that anything is possible at any time in life. And I also, for myself, want to really honor a period of downtime where there is a pulling inward, a period of deep reflection. I think that we need to encourage that more and support that more. There is the later stages in life are meant to be thoughtful and considered. And I just feel like if there is going to be this next reemergence or awakening of some sort or new business or new, could be anything, right? New relationship, new job, new focus in life, living someplace new or whatever. If there is going to be that, the chances of it being aligned with the desires of the soul will be greater if we also take a period where we pull back and we really reflect on the life that we've lived. I guess that's what I really want to encourage. And then there's the whole other conversation about how we don't deal with death very well in this, in our culture. We don't talk about it. We don't like it. There's a lot of people dealing with aging parents, for example, right now, who don't want to talk about death, aren't prepared in any way for the end of their lives, are maybe irritable, angry, difficult, negative. I mean, I hear this from people dealing with aging parents, and I feel like there's such a missed opportunity to be less afraid of death. The more we talk about it and face it, the less afraid we are of it. It's just that we think the opposite. We think that if we just kind of, you know, sweep it under the rug, then we won't have to deal with it. But boy, it comes back tenfold and in a very difficult way later in life if we don't face it in some way. So
I've got to share a very funny story with you. My mother-in-law is going to be 100 in March.
Wow.
And I on Sundays for the last several years, have been doing her shopping, fixing things around the house, whatever she needs, and bringing her dinner. And recently she said to me, "Honey, is there anything you would like from me?" And I said, "Mom," I said, if I predecease you, I'd like you to say a few nice words at my funeral." And she smiled and she said, "I certainly will."
That's great. First of all, you're such a good man, Victor, to do that. That's really sweet. And God bless her for being 100. And what a great response. That's a great response. And also, I think questions like that can be invitations, can be openings, right, to a deeper conversation about what it means to lose. I remember, I think there's a point in the book where I talk about my mother coming to visit and how my mother says something to me around, I forget exactly what I say in the book, but says something about how, you know, she's not going to be around for very long. And I remember saying to her, Mom, don't say that. Don't say that. And she turned and looked at me straight in the eye and she said to me, stop. I'm going to die at some point. And I probably don't have long to be here. So let's not pretend. I want to be honest about that. And I thought, wow, you know, God bless her. Like, good for her. And as difficult as it was to think about that, it also just, it created a connection between us that wouldn't have been there had she not said that and had we not been willing to have that bigger conversation about the fact that we don't live forever, people. You know, we have limited time here on the planet.
Absolutely. And the other beautiful thing about being able to have elderly parents, especially those who are still have their mental vitality and are conversational, is that you can learn a lot by listening. Just, you know, a lot of us growing up have a lot of issues with our parents when we're growing and being rebellious and so on. And sometimes at the as we approach their senior years and perhaps toward the end of their lifetime, is to just sit and give them an opportunity to share their story with you. So you'll hear things that you've never heard before. It's just an amazing experience.
Yes. You know, my dad died a year ago. He died in November of 2016. And one of the things he did about maybe 5 years before he died is he started to write his life story. And every Christmas he would give all of us, I'm one of seven children, he would give each of us a chapter of his life. Mm. And I was amazed. He never got to finish his life. I think he made it up through probably right around the age of 50, but I learned things about my father I never knew that were amazing and that really changed, completely changed my perspective on who he was as a man, changed my perspective on my childhood, changed my perspective on our relationship, and I would have never had that experience had he not taken the time to write his life story. And so if someone's not going to do that, and it wasn't like he was It wasn't this literary work. It was literally outlines, like just, you know, bullet points of things that happened and then little paragraph here and there. But it really captured some of the important events of his life that shaped the man that he was that I didn't understand until I read that. So it's a real gift to
Absolutely.
Do for people. Yeah,
and the gift of listening, just to give people the sacred space to tell their story and to be there to listen to them.
Yeah, and record the stories. I mean, don't be afraid to record the stories, you know, if they'll give you permission to do so, because they will be so priceless. I have some videos of my mom and dad. My mom and dad talking about when they first met and they first started dating. And, oh, they are just precious, precious gifts now that my father's no longer here.
Absolutely. Cheryl, in all your books and audios and videos, speaking and coaching, you've always encouraged people with ways to become their best selves and to find grace in daily life and in building the life of their choosing. Do you think that all the tools you've shared in the past work for the over 50 crowd, or do we need a new roadmap in finding what's important?
No, I'll be honest with you. I think every single book that I've written, every workshop that I've delivered or every audio that I've created of a workshop. I mean, I think about the workshop I did with Louise. There's a DVD called You Can Trust Your Life. And Louise and I did a 2-day workshop in London together before, a few years before she died. She was in her 80s. And the material that we were sharing was just as applicable to somebody in their 80s or 90s as it was to somebody in their early 20s and teens. I mean, she was one of these amazing women in that people would come to our workshops and there would be three generations of people. I mean, that's just so completely unheard of, right? So, and honestly, Victor, the truth is my books cover managing one's outer life, building courage and confidence and dealing with one's emotional life, and then the spiritual life and the unmistakable touch of grace, which was really like a spiritual memoir. I pretty much covered it. I could die at peace knowing the body of work that I've left is a really good education on how to live a soul-directed life, period. And so this next stage of my writing in my life is really about the art of writing, the art of living each day as if it were our last in some ways, and also really using the soul is here to experience life, not to accomplish anything. It's really here to experience life, and I want to experience as much of it as I possibly can, and I want to share that experience with my readers. So
Absolutely. Is there a point in life that we should just let go of the dreams that never came true? Or should we never let go of our most important dreams, but modify them or change our perception of things?
I think what's really important is that we, on a consistent basis, reevaluate our dreams. We reevaluate where we are. We really don't take the time to stop, get quiet, spend time alone, really looking at, okay, what are my goals moving forward? And are they still the goals of who I am today? Or do they belong to somebody from 10 years ago or 20 years ago, or to a parent or to a former spouse or friends? You know, are they my dreams and goals? Are they my desires? I like to think of it more as desires right now. What is it that I'm desiring now at this point in my life? And I think we really have to reevaluate that and look more deeply at the answers to those questions so that we know that we're current and that we're really moving towards the things that are important to who we are authentically today, not who we used to be or who we think we should be.
Sage advice. What message would you like readers to take away from Waking in Winter?
That living an examined life is deeply important, that living an examined life is the key to living a rich and fulfilling life, and that the meaning and the satisfaction that we yearn for comes from our willingness to check under the hood, right? Our willingness to, our commitment to our own evolution, to the soul's evolution, and to really, and to remember that the soul is here to experience life, the good and the bad, the easy and the hard, the painful and the joyful. I mean, that's, the soul doesn't have an agenda one way or the other. It's really about being fully present for all. And when we are fully present for everything that happens in our life, life feels pretty rich and meaningful.
And as my friend shared with me, that woman many years ago, the divine does not require that we be holy, but the divine would love for us to be whole.
Very good. Well said. Well said.
Cheryl Richardson, please tell our listeners where they can get your new book and find out more about your work.
CherylRichardson.com is the best place to go to find me and where you can buy the book and just more about what I'm up to these days.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. This is a true gift to us and to our readers.
Oh, thank you, Victor. It's been really wonderful spending time with you. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.